the trash can.
Hey, good afternoon. I apologize for the late start today. It's kind of an exciting time here at the Capitol and trying to resolve and work on things right up to the last minute. So I am opening a meeting of the House Higher Ed and Workforce Development Committee on Thursday, April 6, 2017. Members, we do have a few public hearings and a few work sessions scheduled for today. So I was going to say we're going to jump right in. I will take a pause one moment to notice that we actually have are able to have shades open today for your viewing pleasure. There's no presentations with PowerPoint, so we do try to accommodate. I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 2311. This has to do with the 40-40-20. And Laura, could you provide us with a little summary?
Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2311 would revise the 40-40-20 higher education goals to relate to adult Oregonians completing education rather than to all adult Oregonians. The bill has minimal fiscal impact, no revenue impact, and no subsequent committee referral.
Thank you. And Mr. Cannon, could you join us, please? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, for the record, Ben Cannon, Executive Director, Higher Education Coordinating Commission. Appreciate the chance to be here again. I'll be brief. You have several bills and a number of folks, at least on the others. And this is a concept that we've previewed for you in connection with our prior presentation, informational presentation on the state's progress towards the 40-40-20 goals. And you may recall at that time that we presented the state's progress in two different ways. One was the using the statute as it reads today, where the goal of 40-40-20 is applied to the entire adult population of Oregon. And so we use census data and we describe our results using that measure. About 33% of Oregonians, adult Oregonians with bachelor's or advanced degrees, another 17% with associate's degrees or undergraduate certificates, the rest having some college or no college. It's about 10% not having completed high school. So that's as it reads in statute today. We went on to suggest that there's another way of looking at 40-40-20, and that's to consider how well sort of rising Oregonians, young Oregonians who are coming out of our K-12 schools are doing, and in terms of high school completion and college and post-secondary completion. And the bill before you, House Bill 2311, clarifies that the 40-40-20 goal is designed primarily as 40-40-20 towards that young Oregon adult population, that rising adult population, that we do intend to have and need to have ambitious and aspirational goals for adult Oregonians, those who are in mid-career, in the workforce, later on in life, but those should not necessarily be 40-40-20, in part because of the sort of impossibility of an illogicality, if that's a word, it's probably not, but the sort of lack of logic in a massive adult education project to, for example, ensure that every older Oregonian who hasn't completed high school gets a GED, goes back to school with 80% of them going on to post-secondary ed. So the bill before you clarifies that 40-40-20, as it would continue to appear in statute, is focused on rising adults, and the HEC, in conjunction with the Workforce Investment Board, would set educational attainment goals for the rest of the adult population based on actual and projected labor market needs and the pathways and avenues and certificates that are associated with success in the labor market. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that's really it in terms of the content of the bill. This reflects a strategy that the HEC adopted in its strategic plan in mid-2016, actually the first of the the kind of core strategies that the HEC adopted, and we think that making this clarification would both help make the 40-40-20 goal more understandable and more realistic, as well as help support the HEC in developing appropriate strategies for young Oregonians and for those that are later in life. That concludes my prepared remarks, Mr. Chair. We have submitted comments on the record as well.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Cannon?
Thank you, Chair. I just want to make sure I understand. The goal is to make sure that all adults are included in attainment of jobs as opposed to earning their GED, or is it adults earning their GED and attaining a job or post-secondary opportunities?
Representative Alonzo Leon, Chair Reardon, members of the committee, if this bill passed, the HEC, in conjunction with the OIB, would set educational goals, including potentially GED completion goals, for adult Oregonians. In doing so, though, we would not necessarily adopt 40-40-20. We probably would not adopt 40-40-20 as the goal for that population. Instead, we would take a more focused view of what the labor market opportunities and needs of the state are, especially given the fact that adults going back to school, completing a GED, earning a post-secondary certificate and degree, are especially concerned with what that the relationship between that education and training and their job possibilities are.
Yeah, Rep. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Ben, I think I understand what you're trying to accomplish, but I guess I'm not convinced that you need the statutorial change to do what you're outlining here. I mean, obviously, you do have strategies for those student populations that are not within the K-20 pipeline, let's just say, and so forth. So what new initiatives would you be able to launch into that you couldn't currently already, given the current language that's on the books?
Representative Johnson, Chair Reardon, that's a good question. And I think it's less a matter of what we can or can't do today than it is a matter of what statute, read literally, suggests we ought to be doing today around the adult education in particular. So again, when we read the statute and see that all Oregonians should have achieved 40-40-20 by the year 2025, including Oregonians at every stage of life, and we try to build a budget and policy package recommendations based on that, it implies a sort of massive investment in the education of adult Oregonians that is not clearly linked to labor market needs in the short term, right? When we're talking about today's fourth graders, the high school class of 2025, that question of labor market needs, job opportunities feels, while very important, it feels less knowable, right? Because they're not entering the labor market for perhaps another decade. And so we feel like 40-40-20 is an appropriate measure of the kind of state that we want to be and the kind of aspirations that we have for our children. Again, when we think about the kinds of investments and policies around adult education, the kinds of goals around adult education, our view has been that understanding the labor market realities, the job opportunities, ought to help drive the goals in a much more linked way than 40-40-20 represents.
Follow up. I don't disagree, but as you mentioned, I think when we passed this bill, when we passed 40-40-20, you know, we were talking about, you know, maybe you even at the time had a kindergartner who. Do you have a kindergartner who's now a fourth grader? this, who was in that class. I mean, we knew what we were talking about. I mean, those of us, we passed it. We weren't assuming that it would, was pertains to the adult population as well. But I understand your delineation in here in terms of spelling it out. And I'll just be frank, my only reluctance and my only red flag is that we've seen other efforts this session to completely eliminate 40-40-20. And I don't want to go down that pathway. And you're not suggesting that, I know. So that's why I'm reluctant, you know, to chip away at all in statutorial language, because what's the next step as we go forward? And I'll just leave it at that. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
So, great concern. Other questions? So in your mind, Mr. Cannon, is this in any way diminish the high standards of this existing framework?
Chair Rudin, members of the committee, I appreciate the question. No. 40-40-20 is an important, ambitious goal for educational attainment in the state of Oregon. If this bill were to pass, the focus of that goal would be clearly and statutorily on our rising adults. And we would create similarly aspirational, ambitious goals for the adult education, for the education of adults that are more closely linked to the actual and projected labor market opportunities for those adults. That would be the clarification this would make.
As you know, we're looking at, and I'm hoping to do some, I have a bill to better align some of the workforce efforts that are going on. So a new goal might be appropriate for that effort, if we get ourselves aligned and then reset our goal at that point, might make sense. Or if we set a goal and we're better aligned, we might actually reach that goal. So,
Chairman, this committee has expressed appropriate interest, I think, in ensuring that our state's educational policies and investments are linked to job needs, industry growth, and opportunities. And that, to us, feels particularly important and true when we're looking at today's adult learners. And that's the spirit with which we would work with the investment board on setting those.
You're trying to kind of separate those that are in the, what I would call the K-20 pipeline, from those that are in more the workforce development arena.
Mr. Chair, correct.
Okay. Rep. Reschke?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Cannon. So just to follow on with those questions, so currently we'll keep the statute for kids that are in school right now, I'll call it, and then we'll have a separate category for those who are in the workforce or should be in the workforce, or we want to be in the workforce. But that's going to be done by rule between the Workforce Investment Board and the HAC, not by the legislative body. Is that correct?
Representative Reschke, Chair Rudin, under this bill, correct.
Okay. And I just have one other follow-up, and that is, how much closer are we to our goal if we switch from the current model of measuring all adults to this new world under this bill?
Representative Reschke, Chair Rudin, we're actually farther
okay.
from the goal.
Mm-hmm.
There are questions of sort of the timing and definitions.
Yeah.
How long do you give a young person to earn their post-secondary
okay.
certificate or degree? But if we take, for example, Oregonians at the age of 25, they are farther from the 40-40-20 goal than the overall Oregon adult population. So this certainly doesn't close the gap. This sort of recalculation of 40-40-20 that's focused on young Oregonians would not, to be clear, would not give us a boost
okay.
in terms of our progress towards 40. This is not some sort of trick to get us to 40-40-20 without actually changing anything.
Okay.
There's a significant gap.
So just one more follow-up. So the way you're describing it and the way I hear it is that this will help us describe reality better so we can reach our goals than the current statute does.
Representative Reschke, Chair Rudin, yes, I believe this better depicts the intent and spirit of 40-40-20.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, thank you.
Okay, Rep. Alonzo Mallon.
Yes, I just wanted to, thank you, Chair, I just wanted to add, I guess, another component to it. Having worked as a GED administrator, we worked with who we considered adult students, they range between 16 to 60, depending on the situation. I think it's very smart to look at goals specifically to adults because they do require, I guess, a different perspective, different thinking around how we can help them achieve their individual goals, whether it's earning their GED or additional training and preparing them for higher paying job. So I support this concept, but I just want to make sure that my colleagues here know that when we talk about adult students, that they do include 16 to 60 plus students. Not to be confused, the K-12 or P-20 system, which could be preschool all the way to 20. So thank you.
Any other comments? Okay, thank you, Mr. Cannon. And anybody in the audience that wish to speak on this bill? Okay, seeing none, I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 2311. And just a moment, please. Members, we're going to revise the schedule just a little bit to accommodate Senator Johnson's very tight schedule. So I'm going to go ahead and open a public hearing on House Bill 33.
Pause.
Oh, on that one?
Sure.
Erase all of that, please. Don't go away. I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2311.
Here we go.
Just a reminder, minimal fiscal impact, no revenue impact, no subsequent committee referral. And if I may have a motion, please.
Chair Reardon, I move HB 2311 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Rep. Alonzo Leon moves House Bill 2311 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay. Excellent. Roll call, please.
Representative Lynam?
Aye.
Representative Clem?
Aye.
Representative Hurd?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Reschke?
Aye.
Representative Solman?
Aye.
Vice Chair Alonzo Leon?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wickett?
Aye.
Chair Reardon?
Aye. The motion passes, and do have anyone feels inspired to carry this particular bill?
I can carry it.
That'd be great. Thank you. Rep. Alonzo Leon, volunteers. That's great. Okay. And do I need to open it to do that, or?
No, you can just say this.
Yes.
Hold on this, because we're waiting for more members for the
third bill. Do my first education
do this
bill
now, real quick?
The floor. Oh. Because we're waiting for two more members.
Okay. So. I'm sorry. I am going to actually, if you look next on the agenda, is House Bill 2313. I've been some late breaking developments in that one, and we're going to carry that over. So,
2313.
Sure for that. And then I'm going to go ahead and open very quickly, Senator, we're going to open a work session on House Bill 2666. Laura, please provide the committee with a brief summary of the bill.
Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2666 would require community college boards to collect mandatory incidental fees upon request of the recognized student government. There's a dash two amendment that makes significant changes. It changes term mandatory incidental fee to mandatory student initiated fee. It defines mandatory student initiated fee to mean a fee that is initiated by the recognized student government of the community college that students are required to pay in addition to tuition fees. It is collected by the board of the community college and allocated by recognized student government of the community college. It clarifies that the board may require a campus referendum in which the student body votes on whether to approve the fee. Stipulates that if the fee is rejected by the student body in a referendum, the recognized student government may not request another mandatory student-initiated fee for the remainder of the academic year. And it authorizes the community college board to render a final decision on appeals. There is minimal fiscal impact, no revenue impact, and no subsequent committee referral.
Okay. I would entertain a motion.
Chair Reardon, I move to adopt the dash two amendment dated 321-2017.
Did you say dash two?
The dash two.
Okay, sorry, looking for a sheet. Rep. Alonzo Leon moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendment dated 3/21/2017. Any discussion? No objection. Amendment is adopted.
No, I'm fine.
You're fine?
Okay.
Rep. Johnson.
Oh, Rep. Johnson.
Did we have feedback from the colleges already?
Awesome.
Yes. There's been much discussion on this.
That's affirmative?
It has been.
That would be
mutually agreeable.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay.
But always good to ask. Okay. And I think, weren't we back to the member? Ready for a...
Mm-hmm. Chair Reardon, I move HB 2666 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Rep. Alonzo Leon moves House Bill 2666 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Rep. Reschke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know these are incidental fees and they're minor fees, but they're fees. And for community college students, usually the reason they're attending community college is because they're in a financial situation that doesn't allow them to go to a four-year school. And so I'm going to be a no on it. I'd rather see a volunteer student government with voluntary fees if people wanted to participate. But I'm not real excited about adding yet just another burden for the single mother or two that always gets trotted out. This is an additional thing that maybe may not make or break her, but it's just another burden that maybe she doesn't want to participate in student government or have these particular causes might not be her cause or his cause or whatever. So I know I'll probably be the only no, but I just want to let you know.
Thank you. Rep. Clem?
Mr. Chair, I just would like to comment. This was the best training I ever had for this job. When I was student body president at my college and different interest groups wanted money from the incidental fee process and I had to go pander to them and like, okay, cut them a deal. Like, what's going to happen? You know, what about this? What about that? It's by far the best training I ever had. And if it was voluntary, I don't think it would have been quite as good because they like this was some serious money at OSU at the time. Okay, it was like $1 million in play.
There's a lot of folks around this building that have benefited from participation in that organization, so.
Probably wish I hadn't, don't you?
Maybe it would have been better. No comment.
Loud.
I'm sorry. Any other discussion? Seeing none, clerk will call a roll.
Representative Bynum?
Aye.
Representative
I personally.
Aye.
Representative
Kerr?
Aye.
Representative No.
Aye.
Vice Chair Alonzo Leon?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Wissett? Aye.
Chair Reardon?
Aye. Motion passes. And we do need a carrier for this one as well.
Well, Rob probably wants to carry it. Representative Nose probably wants to carry it, doesn't
good,
he?
Good thinking. So we will volunteer Representative Nose. Okay, great. Okay, I think that, have I closed this yet? I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2666. Okay. There we go. The moment everybody has waited for. I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 3337. And if Representative Hurd and Senator Johnson could join us.
And Fernandez. Rep. Fernandez.
Oh. And Fernandez and Bynum can go up as well if you wish.
Yeah. There are like 10 of you up there.
Full court press.
How many chairs are there? Holy cow. 34.
That's right. It's
been 3423?
It's been eliminated from the agenda for today.
Oh, okay.
A crowd of many.
As if it's been moved over.
Oh, here. Okay, I see.
Thank you all for being here this afternoon under your busy schedules, and I'll let you folks decide who wants to go first.
Yeah, first.
Okay.
Thanks.
Mr. Chair, colleagues, my name is Dallas Hurd, State Representative from House District 2, here in support of House Bill 3337, and also supporting the Dash 1 amendments. This has been a long time coming for me. I've been thinking about this moment for almost a decade, truthfully. A little background on who I am and how it relates to this. I graduated high school in 2004 and wasn't interested in going to college. I had a good background in business from my father and my parents in general and some other folks that I'm related to, just watching them run small businesses. And so I felt like I had what it took to go get a loan from the bank and take my try. I started out as a sod farmer, strictly just growing the grass, harvesting it, and delivering it to folks. I wasn't interested in laying the sod or doing anything like that because I was a one-man shop, taking care of my own equipment, mowing, vacuuming the grass, fertilizer, spraying it. I mean, it's about a 15-hour-a-day job when you're doing it on your own. So stepping forward a few more years, I'm $100,000 in debt. I have a small little 1992 Ford pickup. I'm living in my grandma's basement, rent-free, thank goodness. Not exactly a hard place to live, actually, with grandma. But things were just not going very well for me. And then the economy starts to collapse. And I was not going to default on my loan. So when I started having customers continue to ask me to lay sod, I'm like, sure. You're going to pay me to lay sod? Absolutely. Then I get this nice little letter in the mail for a $2,000 fine from the state of Oregon. It says you've been accused of landscaping without a license. I honestly had no idea there was even such a thing at the time. So thank goodness the fine was reduced to $200 since it was my first offense. But when I talked to the enforcement officer, who is no longer with the agency, and by the way, I'm going to say the agency is some great people. I really like the folks at the LCB. They treat people good. Whether you're licensed or not licensed, they're good folks. They're just doing their job. But I was not a big fan of this former individual who I talked to. When I asked him, you know, what is this fine? He said it's for working without the license. And I said, well, I'm a citizen of Oregon. Don't I have the right to work? Don't I have the right to earn an income for myself? To pay my debts? Customers called me. They wanted me to lay the sod. They didn't want this other person to lay the sod. They wanted me to do it. He said, no, you don't have the right. And I'll never forget this, and I'll never let anybody forget this. He said, no, you don't have the right. It's a privilege to work in the state of Oregon, and you got to go through us. Folks, I do not agree with that statement. It's a privilege to work for you, the customer. It's my right to work in Oregon. And it's the right of a lot of other folks that are going to be benefited by this legislation. And I want to remind all of us, there's a lot of folks that are represented under this bill that don't have faces to it, names to it. You might never know who they are, but they don't have the finances to fund a big lobby effort to advocate on their behalf. You and I alone are charged with that task. We are the representatives of the people of Oregon, not special interests. This is in the people of Oregon's best interest. I finally obtained my license after spending a lot of money, a lot of time, and if it wasn't for the fact that I came from a gene pool of nearly insane individuals who just don't know how to quit. The senator can relate. That's the only way I got up that slippery, ladderless wall, was to just keep banging away week after week, taking that test over and over until I finally passed the dang thing. Most people don't have that kind of confidence, that kind of drive, nor should they have to. I'm the only individual in Douglas County, 105,000 people in Douglas County, and I'm the only one under the age of 45, I believe, at this point, that operates a licensed, legit landscape construction company. There's something wrong with this system. Now, there's a lot of folks up in the Salem, Portland, Eugene areas that I'm sure are my age, maybe even younger, that have obtained that license. But I come from a community of hardworking, good, honest people who don't always finish high school, who don't always have parents that can teach them the principles and the work ethic that you need right at the beginning to overcome this barrier of entry. There's a lot of folks that just don't have a lot of options. So in 2015, my first session in my first term of office, we successfully passed House Bill 3304. That was a good faith effort on my part to try to put the wheels in motion of keeping tests in place, but make it much easier for people to actually obtain the license. Let's do a real skills test. Before HB 3304, it was written, English-only testing, 7 sections. Now we have a Spanish translation because of that bill. Now we have a Spanish translator for the real skills test option, and we have a real skills test option. The problem is that last year when the test was finally implemented, 0 out of 15 applicants, 0, were able to obtain their license. Yes, some individuals passed some parts of the testing, but no one on their first try, and it was only a one-day test, no one on their first try was able to obtain the license. 100% failure in that regard. $1,200 per individual who had to take that test. That's not accounting for traveling expenses. Income lost from not working that day. As I understand it, I think 3 other individuals took the opportunity to go to the state of Washington to take a similar test because it was adopted under that roof, if you will, of compliance. Only one of them was able to get pretty much to the end, but last I checked in the information that's available to me from the Landscape Contractors Board was that that individual still had a small written test to pass. So to the best of my knowledge, that individual still may not have completed the full testing and obtained a license. There's something wrong with tests where 100% of the applicants fail when we're talking about planting rhododendrons. We're not talking about building houses, folks. And there's a lot more to it. I do this for a living. This is my main source of income, nearly 100%. It's not this job, I can tell you that, and we all know that. 7 of the applicants that took the test required a Spanish translator. And we'll move on from that. So let's get into consumer protection. A lot of folks would say that this bill undermines consumer protection. I say not so. When you think about it, what is the best thing a consumer can have at their disposal to protect their wallet and the quality of the project they seek? Options. Last time I checked, it's options. When there's only one place in town that has what you want and they know it, or there's only 2 or 3 of them and they know it, you're going to pay a lot for it, and you may not always get the best quality. So I like to have options. Furthermore, we live in the internet digital age. You have the Better Business Bureau, Angie's List, Google Ratings, Craigslist, Rants and Raves, if you know what I'm talking about. There you go. Facebook, and many other forms of social media that can alert customers that, hey, you don't want to do business with this person. And I'd like to remind folks of the fact that just because you passed a test does not mean you're a person of character. Retirees, a lot of the time, can't afford good quality landscape construction for 2 reasons. We're just too busy because there's not enough of us to service our area. So I turn down work all the time. If the budget, for the most part, is under $5,000, I can't, for the betterment of my employees and my own family's income, I can't say yes to those jobs because it's the same amount of cost for a job when it comes to the paperwork of the bidding process, moving equipment in, moving it out. It's pretty much all about the same whether the job was $2,000 or $20,000. So I can't just take on every little job, even though I want to. So those folks need somebody that's actually going to be able to do the work for them, who's hungry for the work, who's going to give them the best price possible so that they can achieve their dreams as a retired couple that maybe doesn't have a lot of disposable income. They deserve an option too. I shouldn't be the only option. New licensure means people are going to start paying their taxes. We've got a lot of folks that are going to come in from out of the shadows if this legislation is successful, if you put this bill through. There's a lot of folks doing a lot of unlicensed landscape construction that will no longer do unlicensed. They'll say, you know what? I'm going to pay my $400 roughly a year. I'm going to provide my liability insurance, my bond, a functioning, proper payroll to protect my employees, and everybody else is protected for that, from that. And the taxpayers of Oregon will actually have some extra help. Instead of all the under-the-table cash back-and-forth business, people will actually fear doing that, because if they get caught, they're going to probably lose their license. Furthermore, I think that you would see, I mean, it's just my opinion, that if this bill is implemented, I think unlicensed landscape construction is going to be much more frowned upon in the future than it is right now, because people will begin to understand that it's pretty easy to get your license now if you want to get a small start, get your feet wet. Why don't you have a license? That's what I'd ask somebody. Some of the concerns I want to cover that I've heard about in the building as this bill's been moving through the process. I'm about to wrap up here. Low voltage lighting. So I went to Lowe's today, and I bought a few of these products that I use all the time to display how simple and not intimidating or dangerous this stuff is. It takes longer, folks, to go buy this off the shelf than it does to install it.
You'll have to leave that here for the...
So this is a sprinkler timer. My guys install probably one of these a day. Okay, it takes a couple screws. You hang it. I think most of us know what this is. You plug it into a wall. Okay? Not very scary. When it comes to hardwiring a timer into a wall, to the best of my knowledge, as an all-phase licensed landscape contracting company, which I am, I do not have the legal right nor the desire to hardwire a timer into the wall. Only plug it in. You have to hire a licensed electrician to do that, which we have at times when the customer wants that. Moving on to low voltage lighting. This is the timer transformer for LED, or it doesn't have to be LED, but landscape lighting for your yard. Again, from Lowe's. Could have come from Home Depot, but they weren't close enough. I like them both, though. This is an LED light fixture. Again, you just buy it at the store. Okay, this is the final part of the low voltage lighting process. Again, I want to show that.
I'll be your fan.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes. You plug that in. You don't hardwire anything in. This is the final part of it. You stick that through. This is DC wire. It's two strands. You can do it either side. It's very simple technology that way. You screw this down tight. You go plug your thing in and you're done. That's low voltage lighting. And it's legal for any citizen of Oregon to do that for themselves at home right now. Backflow protection devices. If you're not familiar with what those are, a backflow protection device is a state-mandated device for when you put in a cross connection with drinking water. If you're going to have exposed systems like a sprinkler system that could get bacteria and corrosion into it, you don't want to have that water pollute the drinking water. So you put a backflow device in between to stop any vacuum situation from causing that. I wanted to respect the agreement we had on that particular issue, because I saw that as more of a possibility of something going wrong versus these first two I mentioned. And so you will still, after this legislation is passed, you would still have to take the test to be able to install backflow devices. This legislation does not change that. Continual education credits. I've heard some rumors that there's accusations that this bill would eliminate continual education. That is not true. Continual education will still stay in place, still be required, and I think it's a good thing, and I support its existence and continual implementation into our system of being landscapers. We put, after talking with some folks that were not real excited about this bill, they brought up some great ideas. We tried to implement them into the draft so we didn't have a bunch of amendments making the bill all messy. One of those was, well, why don't we put a bid limit for this new license? So I said, fine. We put an $8,000 bid limit. That means new licensees under this particular portion of the options, you would be able to do most everything that I've just mentioned except for install backflows, and you'd be able to do up to $8,000 worth of work per customer per year. I'm going to wrap things up here so we can get to some other folks. At the end of the day, folks, I've always strived myself, I've always strived to become the best at whatever I'm doing. In landscaping, I think I'm pretty decent at it. I know my guys that work for me are the best. But I have a really hard time looking myself in the mirror and saying I'm the best when I feel like a lot of people are being held out of the market and not being allowed to compete with me for whatever reason they're struggling with. And like 1940s baseball, you can't say you're the best if everybody's not getting to play. And so I'm hoping that we're going to make the right step in the right direction here to resolve this issue and move forward in Oregon and be a state that allows everybody to have a shot at the American and the Oregonian dream. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's continue with this panel and then have questions after. Senator Johnson.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Betsy Johnson. I proudly represent Senate District 16. In Representative Hurd's freshman year, I testified in support of one of his very important bills, House Bill 3304. I also carried the bill on the Senate floor. You might ask why a senior Democrat would want to help out a freshman Republican, and I think you've just seen part of the reason here. My advocacy wasn't related to the subject matter of the bill. Rather, my support was engendered by a number of external factors. One, the passion that you hear from the bill's author. The author of the bill, as you just heard, is a landscape professional. And instead of looking for reasons to exclude newcomers, Representative Hurd has authored legislation to invite more folks into his profession. Moreover, the target population he aimed to help in many cases were Latinos. Regrettably, House Bill 3304 has failed for many of the reasons that you heard Representative Hurd explain, and I believe House Bill 3337 proposes a fix. So let me explain why I hold this opinion. Representative Hurd has just explained why the Landscape Contractor Board test results show this dismal performance with multiple sections score at 100% failure rate. Seven candidates who took the landscape test in Spanish, the average score was 40%. Three candidates requested additional time on the test because English was not their primary language. Average score, 37%. Unacceptable failure rates disproportionately harm Latinos that want to get into the landscape construction business. It also closes the door on many other financially distressed communities. The test cost is prohibitive. It's $1,200. The test is too difficult or expensive to take over and over and over again, and so folks are forced to operate without a license, or they simply give up. This is unacceptable in a state that professes to value diversity. House Bill 3337, I think, will remove barriers to entry so that individual entrepreneurs can easily get licensed, own their own small businesses, immediately begin working on bids up to $8,000 per bid, per client, per year. This way they can build their clientele, they can save money to take the expensive licensure after they've worked in their chosen profession, and they can take tests which removes all bid limits once they have gotten the certification. As you heard from Representative Hurd, my opinion is that the industry is too exclusionary. Instead of trying to assist a new generation of landscape professionals, many seek to close the industry to those very entrepreneurs that are struggling to make ends meet and become the small businessmen that are and women that are the backbone of this state's economy. So I think market share competition suppression has got to stop. I think creating a real skills test and a Spanish language test option would help open up this industry and remove the barriers. Further work needs to be done, and the starting place is your passage of House Bill 3337. Thank you very much, and I'm going to, with the indulgence of the committee, excuse myself. I have a 4 o'clock. I'd be happy to answer any questions before I go.
Any questions for Senator Johnson before she goes? Thank you so much for
being
here.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Hernandez.
Chair Reardon, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Diego Hernandez, State Representative for House District 47, East Portland. So you all just heard a lot of detail around the bill and also a passionate speech from Representative Hurd. The reason why I'm here and supporting this bill, I can really relate to what this bill is trying to accomplish. Because I grew up from a single mom who moved here from Mexico and tried to start her own business and found herself fighting these barriers that existed from her being able to start a small business. So when Representative Hurd started talking to me about that, not only did I remember how many failed attempts my mom had to try to start a business herself because of the licensure requirements and all these different red tapes that really do exist and prohibit particularly low-income folks from trying to be innovative and trying to start a new business, but also because I also remembered all of my uncles and family who tried to go into the field and probably still did go into the field of landscaping. And I'm not going to say whether they had a license or not, but you could probably conclude something yourself. And I think what this bill would do, it would allow for a lot of communities, particularly low-income communities and those communities that have language barriers, to have an opportunity to get a license in a way that's accessible to them, in a way where they could now pay payroll and contribute to taxes, and also in a way that, because most folks want to get a license, they want to do the right thing. What ends up happening is our systems and our barriers that exist just don't allow them to do that. So removing that red tape is really critical, particularly for those disenfranchised communities. So this bill really seeks to help communities that have language and financial barriers. The new licensure is designated, because I know y'all are interested in like CTE and getting people out into the world for emerging entrepreneurs and business startups. So the Dash 1 amendment also clarifies that home builders and construction contractors are not able to use this newly created licensure to boost the bid amounts. With that, I'll leave it at that. I hope you support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Reardon and members of the committee. My name is Janelle Bynum. I proudly represent House District 51 here in Oregon. I'm here in support of House Bill 3337 because it is a straightforward way to scale down barriers to entry to entrepreneurship in Oregon. In effect, it starts to tear down our embedded poll taxes. Often we don't realize how prohibitive certain tests can be, and a high fee going along with the test can exacerbate that problem. An example in my own experience is when McDonald's implemented a national test called ServSafe, and it was for our food safety managers in the restaurants. And what we found was that many of the employees didn't have the educational background it took to pass the test. They didn't have the test-taking skills, and they didn't have the scientific knowledge. They understood how to perform food safety, and they did it every day with a lot of pride, but this test was a barrier for them. We often take for granted our ability to pass a test. We understand what a Scantron is, where you bubble in your name and bubble in the answers. Many of them, when I sat down to do the test-taking skills with them, they had never seen a form like that before. Not all, but some did. The other thing that I noticed in trying to help them work on preparing to pass the test after they'd failed a couple of times was how you eliminate answers. So normally in test taking, you get four choices. So the way you can pass the test is you cross off the two that don't make sense, and then you pick from the two that are more likely. That's a test taking skill, and not everybody has that. So that was one of the things that we did in trying to make sure that people were able to move up the career ladder and that we didn't exclude people who really wanted to work hard and move up their careers without putting in place barriers that were well-intentioned but ineffective. So I would contend these employees were hardworking Oregonians, ready to get to work but prevented from doing so by these barriers. And this problem extends, as you've seen, to many industries. And for us, House Bill 3337 moves us towards removing this problem in landscaping. Again, I contend that some of our practices in the state with respect to licensing amount to poll taxes. It will help people who may not have a college degree or speak English as a first language, work for themselves, and be as entrepreneurial as other small businesses are, providing more opportunities for work and allowing more Oregonians to lift themselves up is a goal we all share, and I hope you'll join me in support of House Bill 3337. Thank you for hearing my testimony today. Preguntas?
Any questions for this panel?
Mr. Chair.
Oh, Rep. Clem.
While you're chatting, I'll just make a comment. First of all, thank you all for coming. And I just wanted to comment, when I first started my computer business, and I think probably to this day, there is no license. So I'm allowed to go into people's homes, look at all their data, fix their computer problems theoretically, clean their viruses, but not able to get out and, you know, mow the lawn. And thankfully there was no license, because I would have been afraid. I'm sure I could have figured it out eventually, but I didn't take computer science in college. I took political science, and I just needed a job. So I put a little Yellow Page ad in and prayed somebody would call before it got so expensive that I had to shut off the phone line to get out of the Yellow Page ad, because that was the only way out at the time. And I can tell you this too. What Representative Hernandez talked about, my mom, single mom, two kids, no one had been to college in my family before. Timber industry goes to hell in Coos Bay, and she got laid off from the school district and sold Tupperware so we could live. Luckily, Tupperware ladies didn't need a license either. And it was weird watching her trying to figure out how to be a business person, because she had never done this before. But I don't think she would have had the money to go get a license if you had had to on how to sell Tupperware.
Question?
Thank you, Chair. I also want to acknowledge and commend the speakers today on this bill. I think that there's certainly a lot of folks out there who are looking to improve their lives, practice their own specialization and the skill sets that they have in that. And it does make me sad that we have a lot of barriers in our state that prohibit a lot of folks from being able to work for themselves in many industries, including this one. And so I just wanted to acknowledge that I really appreciate all of your perspectives today and all of your stories in respect to this bill.
Anything else? Okay, great. Thank you all for being here today. Appreciate it. Okay, Representative Witt, thank you. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing very well, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. State Representative Brad Witt, House District 31, appearing before you this afternoon in support of House Bill 3337. This is a bill that's about opportunity. And brought to you by one of our colleagues who has become at a relatively young age a very successful businessman, and who's made a very good living for himself and his family in a career, or rather a profession, that's a very honorable one. And I think, you know, this is the most selfless bill possible. Someone who appreciates the fact that he has had an opportunity to become very successful. We heard his testimony a moment ago that he doesn't even touch the jobs anymore that he would be making available to others, but recognizes that those are the very jobs that made him successful at one point.
And now he wants to provide that opportunity with others to become successful as well. I wish we had so many other successes coming to the legislature to provide opportunities for other people to be successful just like they are. I strongly urge your support for House Bill 3337 and hope you act on it favorably. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions of Rep. Witt? Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Okay, we're going to change up. Oh, late breaking questions? Okay. We're going to change up the order in which people signed up and to accommodate the some travel schedule. So if I could have Mark Triplett, Ken DeSantis, and Joe Limp, please. It's crowded with six, so.
Chair Reardon, committee, thank you for having us.
You're getting sort of the neophyte crew here. Other folks that would have represented us had conflicts in our schedule, so we're spotting in. So
okay. We don't get all just, of the, I do need your name for the record.
I'm Matt Triplett. If we don't get the decorum right, forgive us.
Not a problem.
Chair Reardon and committee, thank you for allowing me to share my experiences with you this afternoon. My name is Matt Triplett. I am co-owner of a primarily landscape maintenance company in Tualatin, and I live in Sherwood. I'm also current as well as past president of the Oregon Landscape Contractors Association. In addition, I have been the chairman of the Oregon Landscape Contractors Board and chair of the International Certification Council for the National Association of Landscape Professionals. I mentioned the groups with which I've been associated because I think it helps understand my perspective. I would like to be clear from the outset that I oppose 3337, not because it would affect my own business, nor because I'm a shill for professionalizing our industry, because I unashamedly am. In all ways, I think that 3337 is regressive and a step in the wrong direction for the citizens of Oregon. I was introduced to professional landscaping in Oregon while in college, Oregon State, go Bees, when a friend of mine in the industry provided me with a job mowing lawns. I instantly fell in love with the work and the horticulture, the botany, and the gratification that came with beautifying property for others. Deciding to leave school was an easy decision when I saw there was ample opportunity in my newfound passion. I slowly climbed the ranks by attending night and weekend school, learning about soils, plants, pesticide usage, irrigation and hydraulics, and electricity, among other disciplines. That personal growth and commitment is what put me in my position to join my amazing business partner and purchase the company we own today. This is important to me in particular because I feel like I entered this field based on my determination and hard work, not because I was able to register without credentials. When we started our business and knew we would need to become licensed, that role fell to me, and I immersed myself in preparations for the licensing test. I didn't pass the entire test my first time through. I had to rededicate myself to filling in the missing pieces of my knowledge base, a fact that my present and future customers certainly appreciate. As time passed, I became very active in our industry on state, national, and international stages, but it wasn't until my 6 years with the LCB that I came to fully realize the diversity of our industry here in Oregon. The urban, the rural, multi-million dollar companies versus the sole props, maintenance only, design build, combinations thereof, residential, commercial, covered so many more realities than I'd ever imagined. And that brings me back to 3337. I wonder if in some ways this bill is born out of those circumstances by attempting to allow opportunity to the unqualified and economically challenged regions. To my knowledge, there is no demographic information supporting the claim that the current licensing process hinders minorities or is in any other way a purposeful barrier to entry into the industry. Unfortunately, I think opening up the work to any person with a truck and a backhoe belies the fact that landscaping in the state of Oregon includes work that requires critically important knowledge. Can you imagine somebody piercing your house's envelope for a wraparound deck based upon YouTube training? or building a dry stack rock wall without knowing if there are height restrictions on permitting or how to install drainage to keep the wall from failing or hurting people or property. Having seen the claims that Oregon homeowners have made over the years due to shoddy workmanship by unqualified practitioners, I can personally attest that we would be doing a grave disservice to our citizens by shortcutting the current processes. As a point of fact, HB 3337 takes away the guarantee that a licensed landscape contractor in our state has at least been exposed to the complexities of work like irrigation, paver driveway installation, grading and drainage, outdoor kitchens, fences, pathways, and stair construction, and the other disciplines I spoke of previously. Ensuring consumer protection is the primary reason for competency testing for licensure. A big part of the testing is to verify that license applicants understand the laws of what they can and can't do with their license. Without any education or testing requirements, HB 3337 would conceivably allow somebody to perform the most common-sized projects without even knowing the requirements of a contract. Imagine the claims and enforcement nightmares for the licensing agency. I know that they are staying neutral on this bill, but I implore you to ask those probing questions about what cans of worms will be opened by implementing this bill. A decade or so ago, I went on a statewide tour with then LCB Administrator Mike Snyder. Our purpose in large part was to meet with as many...
I need to ask you to wrap it up pretty quick.
I'm almost there.
Several other testifiers.
Thank you. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Sorry. I'm trying to see if I can cut something. Actually, I can wrap it right there. That'll be fine. I'll be happy to discuss any other aspects of the bill.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Questioning.
Appreciate
Thank
your testimony.
Thank you.
My name is Ken DeSantis. Thank you, Chair Rudin and committee, for seeing us today. I'm with DeSantis Landscapes. I've been there for 25 years now. My uncle started the company in 1974 and went through the process of becoming licensed. One thing I learned from my Uncle Tony was to build professionalism in the industry. At early in my career, I started attending OLCA, the Oregon Landscape Contractors Association seminars, and established a eagerness for learning. And with that eagerness for learning, I eventually became very involved with the certification program. Through that certification program involvement, I got to see a lot of people over the years. I was in charge of it for probably about 6 years, 7 years, been involved with it for 20. I've seen a lot of people come and take the test and fail several sections on their first try, come back the next year and pass. With training and dedication, they can do that. And the CLT is very similar to the hands-on portion of the current LCB test. Let's see here. So customer or consumer protection is really the crux of my opposition of this. You can go in and apply to be a landscape contractor under the proposed bill, but that doesn't prove to anybody that you've got the technical skills to do the work that is contracted. Representative Hurd showed some examples of how simple an irrigation controller is to plug into a wall and operate. I completely agree with that part of it. However, there are many pieces of an irrigation system that are far more technical than that. The hydraulics of the system, making sure that you've got the pipes glued, making sure they're in the ground properly, making sure that they're not spraying on the house so that you have problems with the house. If we allow people to do the work that are not trained in a proficiency for this, it creates real dangers to the consumer, both safety-wise and protecting their investments. I could go into other examples. One thing that hits me is that somebody that spends less than $5,000 on a irrigation or a landscape project, and versus somebody that spends $45,000 on a landscape project, it's both a lot of money to each one of those candidate or those clients. So it means the same to them to have a qualified landscape professional doing their landscape. trying to wrap this up as well. In closing, I strongly oppose HB 3337 for the lack of consumer protection that it implies. I'd just like to read a paragraph from the current handout from the LCB. And this lists the value of a license. As a consumer, when you contract with a licensed landscape contracting business, you can be confident that you have a higher level of protection of your investment in your landscape project. I urge you not to dilute that statement. And with that, I thank you for your time.
And thank you for being here. Let's go ahead to the next gentleman, Mr. Limp, I believe.
Yes.
Thank you.
Chairman Reardon and committee, I'm Joe Limp from Sun River. I started my career working on a golf course. I was a golf course superintendent for over 6 years. And I really enjoyed working with the landscape architect that was building the golf courses in Sun River. And I soon realized that this was the kind of work I wanted to do, but I decided that I wanted to be a landscape contractor. And so I had to go through the testing and work my way up. I've had a landscape contracting business now for in excess of 35 years. And I've been on the board and the chairman of the Oregon Landscape Contractors Association, and I was on the Landscape Contractors Board for 6 years. I served as president for a while. I really believe that the way things are today gives a lot of protection to the consumers, and I'm so afraid that House Bill 3337 will do away with the protection for the consumer. I've been kind of doing this work my whole life, and to me, the fact that you have to study and learn to pass the tests to get certified is a very important thing. I've seen so many of these guys that just have a pickup truck, and they're out there unlicensed doing things, and I've seen no good come from that whatsoever. So I'm very strongly opposed to House Bill 3337. Thank you.
Great. Any questions to this panel?
Yes.
Rep. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess just a clarifying question. If you talk about landscaping, is there a common definition of the type of services that are covered by that?
Yeah.
If you talk about like a building contractor, I know what that means. But regarding landscaping, what are we talking about?
There is a definition. There is a definition in statute.
Okay.
And it's planting and talks about ornamental plants, but it also includes driveways, walkways, decks. There's a lot of construction elements to it, which, you know, I appreciated the effort at showing how simple low voltage lighting is, but that sort of belies the fact that we can install decks, we can pierce the envelope of a house as landscapers. I'm not sure that that's something that you just want anybody to be able to do. We can also build retaining walls. We can build retaining walls and pull permits. So the scope of our work is bigger. It's much larger than just the simple put an irrigation system in the ground with, you know, inferior consumer products that won't hold up over a long time. Building a driveway, if you built somebody a paver driveway that failed 5 years later because you didn't know how to set the base, you know, I mean, that's different than just mowing lawns, which and landscape maintenance is not it's not legislated, so you can mow lawns and trim shrubs without the license. The license applies to construction activities.
Okay. That's different. Interesting.
Rep. Wishman. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Santos, can you tell me how many people you employ and how many jobs a year you do under $8,000?
We currently employ approximately 85 employees, and under $8,000, very few. I couldn't give you a number. We don't do a lot of small projects.
Okay. And I forgot.
Follow?
Yes, sir, please. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So here's the gentleman in the middle. Does your career field have an apprentice program?
It doesn't, but what we've I think what substitutes for it is our industry associations have developed a certification program. And that's actually the hands-on test portion of what we're doing with the license came from that program. We're utilizing that program. So,
Mr. Limp, what percentage of your jobs are under 8,000?
I would say probably 30%.
And how many employees, employees do you have?
I have 12.
I want the committee to know that Mr. Limp spent 300 miles to come over here and testify. Mm-hmm. He's a friend. I met him at one of the rulemaking. If you haven't participated in a rulemaking exercise, I did that with the landscaper board people in Bend. And I'm also, I have to admit, a customer, Mr. Limp. So thank you for coming over to give your side of this
You're
bill.
Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And Rep. Peru?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to cover a couple things. Very few decks, driveways, outdoor kitchens that were referenced could ever be covered under an $8,000 bid limit. That's just a fact.
It's not true.
And then as far as walls that would represent any kind of real danger to people, not to say that a small wall can't cause a problem for some folks, but once you get a certain height in the wall, you have to have engineering with the permit.
Okay.
And again, it would probably go way beyond $8,000 to do such a wall.
Sure. Right, thank you. And just watching the clock, folks, here a little bit, but Rep. Belongio Leon?
Yeah, this is actually to Rep. Heard, just to help me better understand what kinds of jobs would fit in the $8,000 limit. I think that will help me better understand the types of work and the level of skills that goes into that work.
Great question. From my own company, primarily, small sprinkler systems, front yards, I can't get a lot done for $8,000 anymore.
We can we'll hold questions for committee members till after the hearing, please. Anything else for these guys? Thank you so much. Appreciate your driving over. Beautiful day for a drive.
It was.
I envy you. Very, very great. So
thank you very much.
Thank you. And if we could, have Marilyn Alexander and Lauren. Can't read the writing very well, but Marilyn and Lauren and Mark Landauer.
Okay, thank you.
And we do have a couple of folks behind you, so my time management, once again, is not very good. Maybe a few minutes each would be appreciated.
Good afternoon, Chairman Reardon, members of the Workforce Development and Higher Education Committee. My name's Lauren Radford. I'm from Gales Creek, Oregon, and I'm here representing nobody except myself. I do happen to sit in the State Landscape Contractors Board, but I am not here to represent them in any way, shape, or form, simply myself, someone who has been in the green industry for about 41 years. I'm retired now, but I've been a landscape and tree service contractor. I've been a vocational teacher of horticulture and arboriculture and extension agent. I'm here to speak in opposition to this bill today. Mm-hmm. I moved to the state 26 years ago from a state that had no regulations when it came to landscaping, the state of South Carolina. And in South Carolina, our landscapers had a reputation just a tad notch above high sea buccaneers. As a business person, I spent an inordinate amount of time trying to convince my customers that I was not a pirate. I was a professional. I had the skills, knowledge, and experience to be able to do the job and do the job right. It was refreshing to come to Oregon here where I could point to my license, my state validated skills and experience, and if they had concerns about whether I got the job done right, I could point to my bond. Now, the bond is not going away with this bill. Proponents will point to the bond and say there's proof of consumer protection. But a bond is kind of like that old saying, a kitty bars the barn door after the cows are out, in that a bond only kicks in after there's been a bad experience between the consumer and the contractor. And the claims process that goes to that bond is not a pleasant process for either the consumer to file, nor the contractor to defend, nor the enforcement officer to collect that evidence, nor the volunteer board members that have to sift through that and make some kind of settlement judgment. I have three specific concerns when it comes to this bill. The first is this $8,000 limit. I'm not sure how that's derived or what it's supposed to represent, except up to $8,000, you don't need to know anything. But after $8,000, you do. My second concern is I believe this is going to be very difficult to detect and enforce. As landscapers, we're required to put our number on the side of the truck, but we're not required to post our contract on the side. So for an enforcement officer to be able to detect whether somebody's gone over that limit or the time period means that the contractor, the homeowner, will have to comply by giving them a contract, which may or may not be the only contract on that particular project site. And if you're a savory and in savory contract, you may be able to figure out that I can give a bunch of little $2,000 mini bids, because under landscape law, anything under $2,000 doesn't require a contract. So there'll be no paper trail to incriminate me if I've done five or six of these on a job site. My last concern is that there are certain things that landscapers can do that are not within the purview of the landscape law. They're under the Construction Contractors Board, most notably low voltage lighting, backflow, and tree care. And that, I see there's been a backflow exam that's been put in here, probably because of the concern that might be pulled by the plumbers. But there's nothing in here when it comes to low voltage lighting and tree care. And those exist because there are questions embedded in the construction and the planning exam that mollify the electricians and the arborists that we might know a little something about doing that. If that's pulled away, there's no guarantee in this bill, I see, that the electricians and the arborists say we no longer feel confident in your competence that you can do these in the public sector, and we're going to pull those. On a personal note, I know it's difficult, that exam can be difficult. As a landscape teacher, I used to run test prep classes for students. I privately tutor people in the field. But those people scaled that ladderless wall eventually, and they got their licenses. I think if they were here today, they'd say they'd be proud in the professionalism it took to finally get that license for them. I believe this bill is detrimental to consumers. I believe it is detrimental to the professionalism in the industry. And because it's going to be difficult to detect and enforce, I believe it's going to be ripe and rife for abuse. Again, my name is Lauren Radford. I'm here representing only myself. Thanks for your time and the airman.
Great. Thank you. Marilyn, would you like to jump in?
Yes. Thank you, committee, for hearing my testimony today. My name is Marilyn Alexander, and I'm from North Plains, Oregon. I am a retired instructor for landscape technology at Portland Community College, where I was part of the program for about 12-plus years. I am also a landscape designer and currently have my own company, as well as being a member of the Oregon chapter of Association for Professional Landscape Designers, which is the national international organization, and I am the president of that this year. I also have my LCP license, so I am a landscape construction professional. While I don't practice as a contractor, I have worked for contractors in the past, and I work with contractors to have my designs installed. I feel this bill, I am opposed to this bill because I feel it's going to undermine existing contractors that are out there, and there's with no requirement for education, experience, or skill level to have this license, there's no protection for the consumer. Somebody asked about what can you get done for an $8,000 amount for a project. Well, that'll build, for most residences, a irrigation system. That'll build a lighting system. That'll get you perhaps a smaller scaled hardscape in the landscape, a fence, a smaller deck, a retaining wall. All of these things can fail in the landscape, and it's very important that we have people that understand how to put them in, that have the skill level to do that, again, protecting the consumer. I don't think anybody here wants to prevent a large portion of our industry, which is Hispanic, from getting ahead and going forward. The board has implemented a Spanish test as well as the technical test. So they're working hard, I think, to make this accessible to all members of our industry, and an industry I've been in for 40 years. So we're quite comfortable with that. I did want to mention that Representative Clem pointed out that he started out working by doing maintenance. There is a big difference between maintenance and construction. Contractors are building things in the landscape, and therefore safety is important for the consumer. It's not, some contractors do maintenance, but if you're having, and that does not require a license. So if I wanted to get my truck out, put a lawnmower in it and start mowing lawns or maintain and prune things in the landscape, that would not require a license in the state of Oregon, but building things does. And you can get quite a bit done for that $8,000. I also wanted to question Representative Hurd's $1,200. I understand. I know when I took my exam, I probably spent somewhere between $500, possibly $600 to get the complete the five sections of the exam that I completed. I'm not sure where the $1,200 came from, except to say that maybe there were multiple sections that need to be passed. And so that might be something that you look into as far as what is the actual cost for the exam. Thank you so much.
Okay. Well, thank you. Mark, if you could do a quick shot here, it'd be
great. I was just cutting my testimony right there. Chair Reardon, members of the committee, my name is Mark Landauer. I'm here on behalf of the Special Districts Association of Oregon. I represent, among other types of districts, municipal water suppliers, sanitary providers, stormwater providers. I'm going to bring a different perspective here. Municipal water suppliers, domestic water suppliers in the state of Oregon, who I represent along with the League of Oregon Cities, supply water to 75% of the state's population. That's approximately 3.3 million people in the state of Oregon. We're committed to supplying safe, reliable, cost-effective water supplies to the communities that we serve. Drinking water providers are focused on proactively managing and stretching current water supplies. Right now, the state is basically completely allocated for water during the summer months. With over a million new Oregonians expected in the next 20 years, next 50 years, it's vital that we have a well-trained landscaping professional corps out there. You may ask why. Well, obviously, landscapers are installing irrigation systems. These irrigation systems, in the summer months, our peak demands nearly double. Okay, so during the winter, we're providing, in this example, say 50 gallons a day per person. In the summer, that doubles. Why is that? It's largely because of landscape irrigation. The other challenge that we have as stormwater and sewer providers is runoff and drainage. It impacts watershed health. We have a number of problems throughout this state where watershed health is impacted by runoff. And we're concerned that the professionals under this proposal may not have the experience or the training to manage adequately the runoff from people's properties. Ultimately, the competency level of landscape or irrigation contractors plays an integral role in our customers' use of water and therefore the overall demands of a water utility. Utilities regularly commit resources to training, updating the landscape professionals. We provide classes, provide training on the most new technologies to further stretch our water supplies. But at the end of the day, this bill, from our perspective, really causes some concerns because we do have water supply, water quality concerns with new people coming in, not having any background in this type of industry, and therefore potentially jeopardizing our supplies or our water quality. I do want to thank Representative Hurd, though, for maintaining the backflow device. When you use a pressurized air to blow out a sprinkler system, that does present a clear and very present danger to the community's health. And as a result, I do thank Representative Hurd for that. But I did want to bring this nuance to this issue and bring it to your attention. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Any questions for this group?
All right. Thank you.
They're getting eager to go, I think so. Thank you very much for your testimony. Appreciate it. And last on the list, we have Ramon Ramirez and Alberto Moreno.
Right, yeah. Something Hobby Lobby, they call that. Support.
Welcome, gentlemen. I'm just glad to have you both here.
Thank you, Chair Reardon and distinguished committee members. My name is Alberto Moreno. I serve as chair for the Oregon Commission on Hispanic Affairs. We are here in support of House Bill 3337-1 because we want to see expanded opportunities for the 500,000 Latinos who live, pray, and work in Oregon. In 2015, I came and spoke in favor of House Bill 3304, which directed the landscape contractor boards to develop a real skills test and offer Spanish language testing options. I was hopeful that our emerging communities could finally have equitable access to their chosen profession as licensed landscape professionals. Unfortunately, I was disappointed to learn, as you have, that multiple sections of the test have a 100% failure rate. As you know, the Latino community is heavily involved in the landscape nursery and agricultural industries and collectively hold vast knowledge in areas that would assist in their passage of this landscape contracting board test. Before I proceed, I want to reflect on the fact that none of the witnesses before you here were able to find, identify, or bring a single Latino contractor to provide testimony in opposition of this bill. But despite obvious barriers with the method of testing candidates, House Bill 3337 does not remove testing requirements or harm the landscape profession by allowing entry of new candidates. Instead, this bill creates entry-level opportunities for members of our community to own their own businesses, to create economic opportunity for their families. I want to remind us that it is minorities and disadvantaged Oregonians who are most vulnerable to the expensive licensure requirements you heard about today. The planting and irrigation total cost for the practical skills test alone is $1,200. For many in my community who wish to enter their chosen profession of landscape contracting, the test is cost prohibitive, and many give up on their dreams of owning a licensed small business. In closing, I support this bill because our communities can no longer accept being excluded from their chosen profession because of language or financial barriers. These emerging entrepreneurs have so much to offer the profession, our state, the economy, and their neighborhoods and their families by providing a service they love in an industry and in a community they love to serve. Thank you this afternoon for your time and attention, and please support this bill by holding a work session to move this onto the House floor for full consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, my name is Ramon Ramirez. I'm president of the Oregon Farmworker Union, PICUN. And Chair Reardon and members of the committee, I want to thank you for having me testify here today. On behalf of our 6,500 members of PICUN, I want to express our full support for House Bill 3337. PICUN is Oregon's farm worker union. We work to improve the living and working conditions of farm workers in the state of Oregon. Even though this bill does not cover farm workers, many of our members do work in landscaping when there's no work in farm labor. So I'm here because I think it's really important that we bring those folks that want to create their own business. I did a little survey before I came in. By the way, I was I was called by Representative Hurd to get my feedback on this bill, first of all, and then second of all, to support it. And so I did. I took a lot of time before I decided to testify in favor of this bill because I wanted to go back to my community. I live in a community that is emerging economically. We have a lot of landscapers, and a lot of these folks are not unlicensed. And the survey I did was to get an idea of how many people, how many years experience do they have working as landscapers, right? So we're not, when the other gentlemen that were up here were talking about, you know, people fixing up lawns and, you know, your home and piercing your envelope of your house, you know, I didn't get that from the people that I interviewed. You know, I talked to around 9 or 10 people, about 10 people, and I asked them, like, how many years experience do you have? What kind of work did you do? And these people will have, like, a lot of years experience, right? And these people are starting to get to a point. The average was almost, like, 8 years experience in landscaping. So we're not talking about people driving in their pickup trucks and, you know, trying to get work, have no experience, don't know what they're doing. These people have, this is like farm labor, right? This is highly technical work. You just can't prune a tree, or you can't, you know, you can't work picking cherries without damaging, you know, the tree. So they come into this, they come into landscaping with some experience, right? And so, but they want to become entrepreneurs. They want to do their own business, but they feel they don't have the opportunity. So I called Representative Furr's office this morning and said, yes, I'm going to testify, because I had the information, right? I don't want to come in this building and say I'm just for this bill, just for the sake of supporting it. This is really going to have this is a big deal in our community. This is going to have this is going to give folks the opportunity to come out of the shadows. And let's, you know, these people, like some of the testimonies, yeah, there's a lot of people out there doing this work that don't have a license. Let's give them the opportunity. When you have a when you have a test and you have 100% failure by Latinos, there's something wrong with that. So we have to change it. So I think we're here to support this bill because it gives people an opportunity. It removes a barrier, right? I had the opportunity. I got a call from State Senator from Alabama, Hank Sanders. And he told me, I need your people to come in March at the 50th anniversary of the march from Selma, Alabama to Montgomery, Alabama. And I didn't know who he was, and, you know, I was kind of a deep Southern voice, and I said, sure, I'll be there. How many people you need? Bring all your people. So we invited a lot of the folks from Khalsa and from Pikuna. We went. I flew down there to Alabama, and I marched from Selma, Alabama to Montgomery, and I seen what institutional racism is all about. And I think every person that wants to change and make equality a norm in our state needs to make that march to see what institutional racism is all about. And I believe this bill corrects a long-standing wrong in our state. So I'm here to support this, and I urge the committee to do the same, and that we need this bill. Let's bring these people, these workers that wanna create their own business, let's bring them out of the shadows, let's give them the opportunity to do so. I'm here and proudly say that I wanna thank you, Representative Hurd, for your courage, for standing up for us and trying to make a difference for us. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions of this panel? Okay. Great. Thank you very much. And thank everybody that's been here today for your testimony. We're not working this bill. It's not scheduled to be working. Was there anybody else from the public that would like to testify? It sounds like folks are ready to call it a day, so.
Mr. Chair,
I'd
like to make a request to work the bill, if you could.
I'm sorry?
I'd like to make a request to work the bill, if you could work it in the schedule.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other comments? All right. I am closing public hearing on House Bill 3337. Closing a meeting of the House Higher Ed and Workforce Development Committee. Closing a meeting of the House Higher Ed and Workforce Development Committee.